Welcome to episode 124 of the Talk to Contact podcast. You know who we are because this is a podcast and that's the way things work. I'm your Rolf Pleiss. He's my twin brother, Paul. And up there in Fargo, it's Cody Christie, don't you know?
Don't you know, yeah. Up here in the Northland, we're getting ready to play some hockey this weekend. Some real old-time North Dakota hockey.
Good. And you're listening to a baseball podcast.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, just to jump right in, we've been speculating all winter long about a Brian Dozier contract extension. There was long rumored the sides were in discussion, and there has been some fierce debate back and forth amongst the podcast group here on the merits of signing Brian Dozier, not signing Brian Dozier, going year to year with him through arbitration, and the Twins finally pulled the trigger this past week, and they signed Brian Dozier to a four-year, $20 million contract, essentially buying out all 4 years of arbitration at probably a little bit under the market rate and then getting on with things.
Yeah, so I think everyone on the internet was pretty excited about Brian Dozier getting signed to this extension. But, I mean, it feels kind of like all they've done is instead of going year to year through arbitration, they've just done all the arbitrating all at once. There's no free agent years. There's no options. It's just a four-year deal. And, I mean, I guess I can't be too mad for it because I don't feel like the Twins overpaid. They probably got a little bit of a deal, but the Twins assumed all the risk on this deal. I don't know. I just don't see a lot of upside in this. Brian Dozier likely has done as good of a season as Brian Dozier can do last year. He probably peaked, and we're paying for some decline here, although at probably just below market rate.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I think what came out of this was they went into the negotiating process with both sides talking about a longer term deal, and when it came down to it there were certain things that Dozier and his agent were looking for, and there were certain things that the Twins were looking for. This is obviously a very unique situation, and that was something that Dozier's agent even brought up in the press conference to announce it. Was you don't often see a team that is going to agree to a deal like this where they're giving up at those arbitration years and not gaining, you know, at least a team option at the end of it, or, you know, buying out a couple of those years of free agency. But Dozier's a little bit of an interesting situation in the fact that he debuted at a much older age than most players coming through the system. He didn't really have that great of a minor league career. I mean, he had one pretty good year at Double A where he won the Twins Minor League Hitter of the Year, but he was older than the competition in that league at that time. Really, the Twins are basing this deal off of what they've seen of him at the major league level, where he has turned into a different style hitter than he was in the minor leagues, looking back at his track record. As Eric said, the Twins are assuming some risk, obviously, by locking into Dozier to this deal. He could go out, you know, during spring here and blow out a knee or something like that and be missing time. So obviously there's some risk on that end, but hypothetically, if he went out and hit 35 home runs this year and figured out how to get his batting average above 300, through the arbitration process, maybe he could have earned a little bit more money. So I honestly went into it thinking that when we've been talking about it, I thought it was going to be more of like a six-year deal for a significant amount of more money that it ended up being. So as far as the money goes, I see from the Twins' perspective where it's a fairly decent deal. They're not locked into a ton of money. They kept bringing up the fact that it gives them some cost certainty, which I don't know how much of a deal that really is to them over the long stretch. I mean, yeah, maybe it saved them $5 million in the long run.
They save the $5 million, but they don't exercise – they give up all their leverage to sign him if he turns into, you know, a very close facsimile for Robinson Cano, right? Because now you've just got him for those 4 years. And I think when we talked before, the discussion was kind of that it starts at 5 years and $25 million, right? That gives you the one of those free agent years. Mm-hmm. So our numbers were right in the ballpark there, and that gives the Twins a deal on that first free agent year and gives Dozier the setup that he needs to guarantee him for life and gives the Twins some cost certainty. So I thought that's kind of where the deal would start. But right now, if Brian Dozier becomes the best second baseman in the American League or one of the top two, you maybe save $5 to $8 million, which is going to be a drop in the bucket. You know, when your payroll is going to be over $100 million for, you know, probably by the time we get 4 years out, it's going to be 125 plus. So it's an even smaller part. So there's not a lot of upside here. And as you said, if he has a disastrous injury that causes him to miss a year or half a year, all of a sudden it's closer to a wash. So not a ton of upside. And maybe Brian Dozier has a great year and the Twins do something like they did with Phil Hughes and then they work out an extension after this. But this deal on its face right now, other than goodwill and cost certainty, I don't know what it gets them. The only thing, the really reason I don't like this is because now I think I owe Jay Korn a helmet nacho.
Delivered. I want it delivered to my seat on opening day.
But that's just not happening.
That is happening. You're delivering it to my seat with extra jalapenos and some napkins. And can you pick me up a beer while you're over there, too?
It's just not happening. I'll purchase you your nacho, and you can pick it up at a predetermined location. And if you don't make it in time, I'll eat your nachos.
Buy it way ahead of time so the cheese gets nice and cold.
Oh, yeah, maybe it'll start to separate. On top of it. It'll be good. The sour cream will melt and get all runny, soggy chips. It's sounding better and better.
Yeah.
It's messed up. I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't do that to your nachos. I would deliver them hot and fresh with a cheery smile and a beverage of your choice.
Well, you're just a bigger guy than I am.
I guess.
You know, I'm not making the big bucks like a startup champion like you are.
What is that? You lost the bet. Don't be mad. You lost the bet.
And I'm paying up.
And you owe Jeremy nachos too, so you lost two bets.
Listen, don't worry about who I owe nachos to.
I think Eric was correct in his response to Jeremy on Twitter with the fact that this really isn't an extension.
Yeah, you just signed for the same 4 years. Maybe it's just a wash, but you'll get some nachos at the Twins home opener.
When we're all wearing our identical hoodies.
Yeah, come find me. Where's Waldo? I'm the guy in the blue hoodie with the helmet nachos.
Jay, thoughts on Mr. Dozier's deal?
Well, I think they took care of their guy. I think they're confident that he can lock up second base for the next 4+ years and be a key part of the top of the lineup and play every day and stay out of trouble and all that. So you got first base locked up. You got second base locked up. You got some pitching rotation slots locked up. So, I mean, I don't know. It's not that much. I mean, you just took care of your guy. You gave him a raise. You did a good job. Yeah, you know, I mean, Eric, you know, damn the man. In Minnesota, we do things differently. We take care of our guys when they deserve it. And Brian Dozier deserved it.
He probably deserved it. But in the business of baseball, you got to do more than deserve it.
You should write greeting cards.
I mean, what if they're... Eric, what... Seriously, what
it's if... It's not... Happy birthday. Not because you earned it.
Yeah. But what if he really is a top 6 AL second baseman for the next 4, 6, 7 years? I mean, makes all the sense in the world.
Well, for 4 years, it makes sense, but for 6 or 7, you don't get any of those years paying the humongous free agent price.
No, that's exactly
you
it.
You give back all the savings team, that you maybe
you're
made.
You get a little bit of a home team discount if he, after 4 years, and you know he's going to want to stay here. After this, of course he's going to want to stay here. He loves it here. He said that. So in 4 years, if he deserves it
again, everybody who gets paid loves it wherever they're getting paid.
If he deserves it in 4 years, he'll get paid. He'll get paid again. He'll get paid more.
I really hope that someone else pays him in 4 years. I think the best case scenario is that maybe in 2 years or 3 years, the Twins trade him away for some kind of prospect, and someone else can then continue to pay him.
Yeah, I mean, really, we're paying for his peak seasons. I mean, if you look at most sabermetric analysis, they say guys are either in their peak season, you know, between 27, 29, somewhere in that range. So we're getting him for his – he just finished his age 27 season. So we're going to have him for 28, 29, 30. And, you know, like Paul said, maybe if – he's coming off of a couple of good years, and Jorge Polanco's looking like a good good replacement guy to come in at shortstop, maybe move Danny Santana over to second base, depending on how that situation shakes out. I mean, they got a guy like Levi Michael in the system, that Nico Goodrum. I mean, there's a lot of infield guys that could fill in at some point. So I think I like the fact that they have him for these 4 years. For, you know, where it hopefully we're getting the best that Brian Dozier can be.
Well, yeah, and this isn't an indictment on Brian Dozier. He's a good baseball player. I'm happy to have him on the team. This is just, I think, a what the heck contract. I mean, like I said, you get cost certainty, but your biggest upside with these 4 years is that you save maybe $8 million. And then you give it all back when you sign him as a free agent.
That's where I think you're wrong.
Well, in 4 years, we'll have to bet another helmet nacho. You want to let it ride, Jay? A little double or nothing action?
No. I'm going to collect my winnings and be on my way, kind sir. Thank you.
Oh.
Okay. Well, that's probably about all the Brian Dozier talk that I can handle for one segment. So... what else has been going on in spring training? I've been peeking into some games here or there, catching the first few innings of some things. And I saw against the Orioles that Josmel Pinto, he got hit in the back of the head. I think it was an Adam Jones swing.
He didn't get hit once. He didn't get hit twice. He got hit three times. I mean, and Adam Jones is known for having a long swing, and I think they were pitching him off-speed pitch away, so his swing got even longer, and Pinto maybe has some known defensive liabilities, so he maybe lunged at the ball a little bit.
Known defensive liability. I like that terminology.
And he got hit in the head three times. Three times in one at-bat. Now he's got concussion-like symptoms, and he already had a slow spring going, and I don't know. This just is all kinds of bad news for Josmel.
Well, and I think it was two different at-bats, but it played out very strangely because he got hit the first time. Then the second at-bat, he got hit again, and the trainers came out and looked at him and everything. But then he still went to catching the rest of the inning, and then after that, then they swapped him out. And it's a spring training game. If the guy gets hit in the back of the head, just take him out. Twins trainer, strike again.
Maybe he answered all the questions right.
Yeah, I don't know. The first time the trainers didn't even come out, though. And it seemed like the guy that was most concerned about everything was the home plate umpire.
You know, they got each other's backs back there. They know what it's like to get hit with a ball or a bat or all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does anyone know what the current... what's going on with Pinto right now? I mean, this was a few days ago. I don't think he's been in any game action since.
No.
But I thought he was going to get back to some baseball type activities.
Yeah, I saw the other day he was doing like some treadmill action and stuff like that. So I haven't seen anything specific about him, like actually being like swinging in a cage or anything like that. But it could have been out there, and I just didn't see it.
I think we're down to about 10 days till opening day.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. It's about 10 days till opening day, yeah.
So, I mean, I think this definitely means, or very likely means, we're probably going to see Chris or Eric Fryer or Chris Herman as that third catcher that we all know and love here in Minnesota.
Herman's already on the roster, so it would make more sense for Herman to be brought up with the club. They can start Pinto on the 7-day concussion DL and just keep him on that until he's ready. And then they don't have to do any wiggling with trying to get Eric Fryer back on there. Boom.
Yeah.
Knowledge
I like that because I was flabbergasted most of the second half of last season with Eric Fryer not only being on the 40-man roster but also on the 25-man roster. So
Paul, you were flabbergasted?
Paul was flabbergasted. It's terrible. Yeah, so hopefully Josemel Pinto, Mr. Beans, is okay and can remember how to hit major league pitching because we haven't seen him do that with any kind of authority for going on more than a year now. So hopefully this has knocked some of those Pinto beans back into place.
Pinto beans.
Do you guys think that Josemel Pinto will ever be a regular catcher? Has the ship sailed on that? Is his defense so bad?
How come no other catcher is getting hit three times in the helmet? There's something going on back there that he's just not positioned right. I know Jones has a long backswing.
Well, that could just be he didn't pay attention for a spring training game. I mean, guys get hit, but I don't think that's a knock on his defense, but I don't know.
No, he's not going to be a catcher. He'll find some way to, you know, fill in and it's some kind of backup role where he can get some time at DH. I don't know if that's going to be with the Twins, obviously, because they seem to have other guys that are going to fit into that DH type role. The Kenny Vargas, Joe Mauer is going to continue to need some time at DH. Miguel Sano will probably need some time at DH as we're moving through the years. So, Pinto, I could see a situation where he eventually lands up on a different club.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think his best bet is to be that second or emergency catcher on a roster. And that's all assuming that he figures out how to continue hitting like he did a year and a half ago. So hopefully he gets past this concession deal, comes up with the Twins, and we see him start to bop the ball with some authority.
All right. What about the pitching? The pitching, the pitching, the pitching. So we're now, like you said, a week and a half away from opening day. There has been some cuts. Some things are starting to line up. But I still think we have absolutely no idea who's going to be the fifth starter. So, you know, Alex Meyer is down now in minor league camp. But we still have Trevor May. We still have Mike Pelfrey. We still have Tommy Malone. And it seems like all three are still in a dead heat. Trevor May had a nice outing his last time out, 4 strong innings. But again, he has started slow in spring training because of the flu. And so he's still limited in his pitch count in his last start. Mike Pelfrey has continued to kind of pitch better than the Mike Pelfrey we could have expected, but not good enough where he has earned that fifth spot. And Tommy Malone's kind of been up and down, and at times it's looked like his 89-mile-an-hour fastball and his changeup have been effective, but other times the other teams have appeared to just square up on it and hit it to all parts of the field. So now we're down to the wire. I'm still going with Mike Pelfrey as the number 5 starter, and it seems more likely that Malone's going to go in the bullpen. But Trevor May, if he can continue to throw strikes and get guys out, he could come in and snipe this spot away.
Yeah, I just don't know how much upside there is with Tommy Malone. I think he had his one of his last starts today. Pitched 5 innings, gave up 3 runs on 6 hits, 3 strikeouts, and 2 walks. And I feel like that's pretty much what you should expect from Tommy Malone every time he takes the hill. You expect that he probably is not going to give the game away, but he's also probably not going to give you a real good shot at winning. It is what you would call a prototypical back-of-the-rotation starter.
It's true. It's true. And Tommy Malone is not a big dude. He's not imposing. I mean, he looks... You would when I saw him, I told you guys this a couple weeks ago. You would never think if you passed him on the street that he like was a pitcher for the Twins. But he's left-handed, right?
Do you think if Tommy Malone started wearing high socks or stirrups, that he would become a better pitcher?
Everyone would become better.
Yeah,
because I would be willing to throw my support behind him for the fifth starter spot. If he looked a little bit more fashionable out there instead of wearing those damn pajama pants.
That's the hardest hitting analysis we've heard from you all winter.
But anyway, I think we keep hearing more and more in the media about Pelfrey being okay or being, if he gets sent to the bullpen, he's going to accept it. And I mean, I feel like Trevor May maybe has kind of moved himself up with that last great outing he had, 4 shutout innings, finishes the rest of his pitches there in the bullpen, and just looked good, looked like he has that command. I think someone said that he took up yoga to help him with his mental side of the game. And when we had him on the podcast before, he's just a very cerebral guy. So anything he can do to kind of maybe get out of his head a little bit when he's out there. But I think that Mike Pelfrey is just not a sexy choice, even though he's a Sasquatch. If it's not Trevor May, I'm going to be disappointed either way.
I think the Twins, because of the amount of money they have invested in Pelfrey, are going to want to try and get something out of that money, try and glean some value out of what they've invested into him, especially after not getting anything last year. So I'm in agreement with Eric that I think as of right now, unless May does something, terrific here in the next few days, that we're looking at May starts the year in AAA, and that first injury, he's that next guy up, and that Malone's out in the bullpen.
Well, yeah, and Mike Pelfrey, from all things that I've been hearing so far, his velocity is all the way back. He's pitching okay. He doesn't get a ton of strikeouts, but he's not walking a lot of guys either this spring. And he's only given up 2 earned runs so far in what would amount to essentially 2 full starts if you were to play it out that way. So he's had a pretty nice spring, all things considered. And because I thought he was the guy that had to lose that spot, I still think that he's my guy there in the fifth spot.
I think Michael Tonkin's getting hosed again. I'm on the Michael Tonkin bandwagon, even though there isn't one.
There's plenty of room on the Michael Tonkin bandwagon.
I think
that's
the only
sure.
person on the Michael Tonkin bandwagon is maybe Jason Kubel. And after what we saw from Kubel last year, maybe no one's listening to anything Kubel has to say.
I'm just saying, I feel like he's pitched 30 innings the last 2 seasons. And yeah, the numbers haven't been fantastic, but I feel like he's to the point. I mean, he's a little bit older. He's going to be in his age 25 season. So, he's got some good velocity. I feel like he just got pushed out again because of some of the other guys that the starter types that they're trying to find room for out there in the bullpen. So we'll see. I feel like Tonkin's another guy that deserves more of a shot than he's been given.
Yeah, Tim Stauffer is stealing that spot.
Do you think that Terry Ryan just hates gingers?
Yep, there it is. He's racist.
I knew it. Okay, well, also Jimmy Graham could be stealing that spot too, because they got to try to stash him. He's still with the club, so it looks like they're at least going to give it a go.
Yeah, so just to make sure it's absolutely clear, Michael Tonkin, along with Alex Meyer, did get sent down to minor league camp. in case you haven't been watching all the Twins spring training transactions super closely. So they're definitely weeding it out now and making those final roster decisions. And hopefully this time next week we'll have a pretty good idea of what the team's going to look like on opening day.
So one of the other decisions then, and one we've talked about extensively on this podcast, is that center field job. The one thing that's come out in the last week is the Twins have said that in order for Rosario or Hicks to make the club as they head north, they would have to be the starting center fielder. So they're not going to do a situation where one of them is coming off the bench or playing in a backup role. I think, I mean, the club obviously wants them to be getting regular at-bats. So to be in, if Jordan Schaefer or if they were to move Danny Santana back out there, something like that, if they were going to go with one of those situations, that we would see Rosario and Hicks down in the minor leagues.
Yeah, well, Rosario, I think, will definitely be in the minor leagues. It's interesting that they say that with Plouffe, with Hicks, because, I mean, they don't have a ton of outfield depth there. You know, I think Jordan Schaefer and Aaron Hicks, those are your guys. I mean, what do you do? Right?
I feel like it's going to be tough for them to say that Aaron Hicks won the job this season. The last 2 years, they've been able to, you know, as much as spring training numbers don't mean a darn, they were able to point at his numbers and say, well, look, he's hitting the cover off the ball. We can't ignore that. We have to bring him up with us. And then he flushed it down the toilet when the season started. Now this year, he's flushed it down the toilet during spring. So I feel like it's going to be a tough sell to fans to say, yeah, he won the job when he's hitting, you know, like 200 and no power and not getting walks and not doing anything on the bases. So unless there's like something that clicks here with him in the next week, I mean, he's hitting 207, 294, 345 so far this spring with a couple of triples. So I don't know, 7 strikeouts in 34 plate appearances. Doesn't sound like a guy that's the switch is clicked on for him.
Yeah, and alternatively, we've seen a guy this spring, Shane Robinson, look pretty good. So, I mean, I guess there could be a way that Schaefer and Robinson are the last two guys in that outfield, and then
Platoon. Both
Hicks and Rosario get sent down to AAA. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like this position battle is not. It's not been finalized yet.
Yeah, a platoon of Schaefer and Robinson could be at least somewhat intriguing. I don't know how excited I would get about it, I guess, but I think they could both offer something. I think just Schaefer's speed alone on the bases is something that would definitely be interesting, especially with Molitor at the helm now, if they're a little bit more willing to run. So getting him out there more regularly, I think, I mean, between Atlanta and the Twins last year, I think he had 30 steals, which, you know, is pretty solid for a guy that wasn't out there every day necessarily. So, you know, can his defense hold up as a consistent center fielder until another domino falls somewhere and another guy is brought up or something like that? We would have to see.
Yeah, and then it gets even stickier because if you look at things and you try and determine, you know, what is the best lineup that the Twins could put out there, none of those guys are probably going to be your center fielder. If you just try and put the best 9 guys on the field, 10 guys if you include a DH, you probably have Danny Santana and Eduardo Escobar in that lineup, and you figure out a way to fit them both in, which means Danny Santana's back in the outfield. Right? I mean, is that the best way to fit the team together right now? I mean, it doesn't fit where Molitor wants to have all his pieces, But if you were trying to win the most games possible in 2015 only, that might be what you do on opening day and go forward from there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I don't think the Twins are not trying to win games, but I think they're trying to win games in 2016 and 17 and 18 a lot more than they're trying to win in 2015 right now. Their eye is on what can we do next year and the year after that. How can we be positioned for success?
Are you saying that with the expectation that they want to get Danny Santana as much time as possible at shortstop?
Well, they need to figure out if Danny Santana is a shortstop, right?
Okay.
I mean, it sounds like his defense this spring has been a lot better than expected, and with the exception of rushing a couple of throws, which, you know, maybe as he learns the pacing, you know, of some of the faster guys, he's not rushing all those throws, not trying to do too much. Maybe his throwing errors start to go down, but with the exception of that, it sounds like his defense has been pretty decent so far this spring.
Paul,
there haven't been any concerns about his ability to stick there. And those were a lot of the concerns that we heard last year and as he came up through the system as well.
Paul, have you seen Santana much this spring? Paul's not there.
Guess not.
Paul's disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, the reports have been good, that he's shown some improvement, which, I mean, it's tough to go on because he didn't play a ton there last year either. I mean, Gardenhire was more concerned about getting him out there, keeping him in the lineup and keeping some of the better players on the field. So that meant that Santana was out in center field. You know, it would have been nice last year, I mean, knowing that the season was going the way that it was, to get Santana in at shortstop more consistently. So the Twins knew what they had to work with a little bit more just to get those extra repetitions and stuff like that. But I mean, as we're moving forward, I mean, we touched on a little bit with the Dozier piece. I think there's other pieces coming up through the system, might be thought of a little bit more highly when it comes to the defensive side of the ball at shortstop. So even if things aren't to work out, as we've seen with Brian Dozier didn't work out at shortstop, Trevor Plouffe didn't work out at shortstop, there's been guys that have worked through the system and had to be pushed to other spots on the field in order to stay in this lineup. So maybe that's the same thing with Danny Santana. They might, you know, he might be able to stay there for this year or maybe part of next year. But, you know, as some of the other pieces start breaking through and coming up to this level, I think we might see him shift to another spot.
Yeah, and it's not like any of that talent is ready to go right now. I mean, Michael is the closest guy, and he has really not been able to stay healthy for an entire season and put things together at the same time. So, and he's really, really been moved off of that shortstop position. So if he came up, he would be a second baseman now blocked by Brian Dozier for whatever that's worth. But Polanco, you know, same thing. He's a couple of years away. You know, he was up last year just because of the Twins' issues with having any depth at all that was ready to come up and dealing with injuries. But, he's really, you'd look at a 2016 guy, and Nick Gordon is probably 4 years away at best. So there's certainly a hole to fill for now, but if he has any troubles at all, they could look at maybe moving a couple of those guys a little bit faster or even stretching Levi Michael.
I feel like you guys are kind of just debating this just to debate it, because I don't think there's a position battle at shortstop. They're going to give it to Danny Santana. Escobar is going to be a super utility, spelling guys all across the infield, maybe even in the outfield. So he's going to be getting regular playing time. We already talked about, so I don't think there's a position battle at shortstop. And so while you'd like to have them both in the lineup, I just don't think you're going to see it that often with Santana in center field and Escobar at shortstop. We talked about there is a position battle in center field, and I think that there may be a position battle also going on in left field. Oswaldo Arcia has not looked very impressive this spring. He's yet to hit a home run or take a walk. And he was coming off of a bit of a letdown in his sophomore season last year. So, I mean,
but he hits bombs, Paul.
Well, he's not hitting them.
It's spring. It doesn't matter.
It is spring. It doesn't matter. But he had a, I would say, a disappointing sophomore season last year. And if a guy like Eddie Rosario starts the season in AAA and hits the cover off the ball, I think Eddie Rosario is going to have to worry just as much as whoever's playing, Oswaldo Arcia is going to have to worry just as much as whoever's playing center field is going to have to worry about their replacement coming up.
Paul, Torii Hunter or Oswaldo Arcia is going to be hurt within the first couple months, and then Rosario will be up anyway.
Very well.
I smell a nacho bet.
No nacho bets.
I can't afford to make any nacho bets right now. I'm in the red.
Yeah. You're paying for a wedding, right?
I'm already paying for two sets of nachos plus a wedding.
Yeah, so,
what else do we got here on the outline? Any good twin stuff to chat about here?
The Thorpe, Lewis Thorpe thing, it's been out there for a while. He's been pitching through some kind of elbow problem. We covered it within the Twins Prospect Handbook this year, assuming that he was headed for Tommy John surgery at that point. The Twins have continued to put him out there, and he's been working on the minor league side of camp. And Terry Ryans has said, you know, that Thorpe was in camp and has been in the academy there for a while and looked good, looked strong, looked healthy. But within his last outing, felt some more discomfort in that elbow, is having an MRI done. They don't know. It's not official yet that he's going to have Tommy John surgery. But I feel like this is another case where they just keep pushing back, which is just going to put back his rehab time even further. I know anytime you're making this kind of decision and throwing a guy under the knife, you want to be as careful as possible. But I don't know. The big value with Thorpe was how good he was at how young an age that he was. So to keep waiting and wondering if he's going to be able to fight through this, I feel like the success rate of Tommy John surgery is so good that they might as well just get it done, clean it out, and get him back on the path to recovery so he can, you know, salvage the end of his minor league career here and get up to the major league level at a still young age.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. With so much time left, or and how young he is, you can lose a year and he can still be ahead of schedule. And Lewis Thorpe was kind of a guy that just showed up out of nowhere for a lot of people. I mean, he's one of those Australian guys that, you know, you never know what you're going to get with them. You might get a Luke Hughes, you might get a Lewis Thorpe, you might get, you know, something else. So anything that he turns into is pretty good.
Yeah, keep naming those Australian baseball players. How about it?
Todd
Steedsel.
Who is the guy that we had that went to the A's that wasn't Luke Hughes, the pitcher?
Belfour.
Belfour, yeah.
Was it Rene Tassoni? Was he Australian?
I don't know if he was Australian or he just went to play over there.
Liam Hendricks.
Liam Hendricks. The Twins are deep with Australians. Yeah, Tassoni was from Canada.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
They're all English colonies, right?
Yeah, it was pretty close. So, Thorpe looks like he's headed towards Tommy John surgery. The Twins haven't officially made it official yet, but it'll be interesting to see how that pans out as we're moving forward. Not a ton of other news that was out there. I know one thing that I've been considering and kind of keeping an eye on, and it sounds like the players union and stuff are keeping track of, is what the Cubs are going to do with Chris Bryant here. Did some great things in the minor leagues last year, and now is killing the ball in spring training. So they're keeping an eye on what the Cubs are going to do as far as bringing him up and when they bring him up. And as far as how that fits in with the Twins, I mean, I think it's something to keep in mind with, I mean, the Twins have some other guys that are considered, you know, some of the best prospects in the minor leagues with Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano, maybe Jose Berrios throwing a guy like that into that mix. So, you know, as those guys work towards Target Field, it will definitely be interesting to see how baseball handles this. I mean, it's kind of a weird rule, you know, like the Super 2 thing as far as these guys qualifying for arbitration. You know, all they have to be down in the minor leagues for is like 2 weeks or something crazy like that, like we talked about on previous shows. You know, for Bryant, it's only going to amount to the Cubs basically send him down for 9 games and they get a whole extra year of control over him. So maybe it's something they need to revisit a little when it comes to the next collective bargaining deal, just to try and figure out a way where maybe the teams or they have to consider the teams and they have to consider the players. And I don't know what the solution would be at this point, but it's something to watch, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think this only matters in the case of the biggest superstars. And because the Twins could potentially have two of these guys, it's even more interesting. Because if you don't become a superstar, worst case scenario, what? You turn into like a Trevor Plouffe and you get that extra year of arbitration and maybe it costs your hometown team $5 or $10 million. But if you're an okay guy, they're willing to pay it. And if you become a superstar, then they're happy to have you for that extra year, even if it costs a little bit of extra money. And, you know, so I don't know. Bryant is just exploding this spring. I think he hit another home run yesterday. He has like 9 so far this spring. And while he doesn't necessarily have a defensive home right now, it sounds like he's being flip-flopped between third base and a corner outfield spot. And the Twins will, or the Cubs will use that defensive indifference kind of thing to justify sending him down to AAA for 2.5 weeks or whatever. But he's going to be a special guy. He's going to hit the ball a long way a lot of times. And I think if everything goes right, you could see something similar with Miguel Sano in terms of the power display that he could be able to put on.
As long as he's up by the time they come to Target Field in June, right? Isn't that in the near the end of June?
Yeah, middle of June, I think the 20th, 21st, 19th, 20th, 21st, something like that. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3-game set, right over Father's Day weekend.
As long as he's here by then, right? And then we can see him in person.
Yeah, maybe we'll catch his home run ball. Jay likes to sit out in the outfield. He sits up there in the upper deck. He could probably get one, too.
Definitely. I thought there were some funny shots out there of Ron Gardenhire visited spring training within the last week, showed up with a cigar in his mouth and a proud, I don't know, wherever his daughters are in college, dad shirt. And he had an extra cigar in a Ziploc bag. So I feel like he's enjoying the good life of being retired.
Yeah, not only retired, but still making a huge chunk of change from the Minnesota Twins. So if he wants to come hang out and stop by and say hello, maybe they can write that $2 million off if he's at least there every once in a while.
Cheering. He's like a cheerleader. He's just building morale with the guys. He's a player's manager, right?
So yeah, he's going around putting Y's on the end of guys' last names and giving them nicknames.
Yeah, pretty interesting situation. But I'm sure it was tough for him not to be around the game for probably the first time in, you know, decades, from going straight from being a player into coaching at different levels. He's been around the game for, you know, since his youth, you know, going through his professional career and then into coaching. So I'm sure it was a weird spring for him not to be in that routine, but got to stop in, got to see some of the guys he knows. Maybe he got another hug from Plouffe. wasn't that Plouf that tracked him down on the day he got fired in the parking lot to give him a hug? So maybe Ploofy, as Gardy would call him, got another hug in from his old manager. So I don't know, guys. I think that wraps up our news, or our Twins news for the week. So on last week's show, we finished out our reviewing the roster series, where we had gone through all the guys that were on the Twins 40-man roster. So during the regular season, we pick out a pitcher and hitter of the week. So I thought it would be more appropriate on this show if we look at maybe some of the standouts in each of those categories so far this spring. I mean, there's been some good hitting performances. Pitching, it's a little bit more difficult with they have such short outings. And if you give up a run or two, it kind of inflates some of your ERA and stuff like that. So, but still fun to look at what some of the guys have done. So let's jump into maybe start with the pitchers, since there isn't some eye-popping numbers there as there are on the offensive side. But Jose Berrios did very well during his first stretch with the club before he was sent down. He had 6 innings pitched over a couple appearances, didn't give up any runs, struck out 4, gave up 7 hits, so a little over a hit an inning, but never gave up any runs, so that was pretty good. As we talked about earlier, Mike Pelfrey might be in the running for that final rotation spot. He's pitched over 13 innings, almost 14, only given up 2 earned runs, struck out 7, but he has given up 15 hits during that time. Kyle Gibson seems locked into the rotation already, but he's pitched almost 14 innings as well, given up 5 earned runs, struck out 10. And then Ricky Nolasco has been striking out guys at a decent rate, but almost 1 an inning, has given up 6 earned runs so far this spring on 13 hits over almost 14 innings. So,
yeah, isn't this just a depressing group?
Yeah, I told you it was rough.
I mean,
with these pitchers,
probably the best guy is a guy that we talked about already. You didn't even mention him, Trevor May. Trevor May's made 2 appearances. He's pitched 6 innings and he struck out 7 guys, and he's just given up 1 earned run. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just so awful, and it makes you think surely the Twins have made some strides with their pitching, but holy cow, it could still be pretty poor when we get into the season, I don't know what to expect.
We can always rely on that it's spring, and some of these guys were probably going out there and, you know, their focus for the day was, you know, we need you to throw your changeup a ton. And sometimes hitters can pick up on that. If all they're seeing is a changeup, eventually they're going to figure it out and be able to get a hold of one. So, I mean, we've talked about spring training numbers don't matter, but yeah, it's still interesting. I mean, Berrios' line was pretty good when he was with the big league club. Today, I know he gave up a run in 4 innings pitch, he gave up 1 and like struck out 4, I think, on the minor league side. But his line with the major league club was pretty good. But like you said, May's line is also pretty good. So I don't know. Do we have votes for anybody? Can we give it to no one?
Well, I'm throwing my weight behind Mike Pelfrey, because considering what he did last year and what I'm rooting for to happen in a week and a half, I'm throwing my money behind the Sasquatch hunter, Mike Pelfrey. 6'7", 240, whatever he is.
He's not a Sasquatch hunter. He is a Sasquatch.
Oh, was it? It was Swarzak that was a Sasquatch hunter.
Yes, yes. And I've tweeted several times to Swarzak asking whether he can confirm or deny if Mike Pelfrey is a Sasquatch. And I've received no response. I'm quite disappointed. I understand Alex is busy over there in with the Cleveland Indians working in camp. But I can't believe he doesn't have time to talk a little Sasquatch and confirm the rumor that Mike Pelfrey is, in fact, a Squatch.
Did you call him Alex, by the way?
Maybe. I don't know. Either way, he's not responded to my tweets.
You're so angry at him for not responding that you're not going to call him by his first name.
That's correct.
Okay.
That is correct. So I also vote for Mike Pelfrey because he is a Sasquatch, and it's not very often that you get to see a theoretically mythological creature throw a baseball. I would also vote for him or any unicorn that could throw a baseball.
All right, so let's give picture of the spring thus far to Mr. Pelfrey, which is so depressing to say those words. So let's hop over to the offensive side of things. We got hitter of the spring so far. Mr. Brian Dozier and his new contract have been doing very well. He's hitting almost 400, hitting 394 going into today's action. He's got three long balls, four doubles. He's driven in five runs. Eduardo Escobar has been an RBI machine. He's driven in 11. He's hitting 300, has had three extra base hits, including a couple home runs. Eduardo Nunez may be showing why the Twins have been keeping him around or plan on keeping him on this roster in some capacities, hitting over 400, got a home run, three doubles, five RBIs. Kenis Vargas, all he does is hit home runs, folks. He's leading the team with four long balls. Also got a double in there, driven in eight runs. His batting average isn't pretty, but he's hitting the ball over the fence and keeping that smile on everyone's face.
217, 280, 500.
He put the ball in the people, though.
So that's a slash line you don't see often.
You definitely do not see that often.
He puts the ball in the people. I like that.
I think it's got to be Dozier for the combination of doubles, home runs, high batting average, celebrate his new contract by getting our hitter of the spring so far.
I don't want to vote for Dozier.
God, you hate Dozier too.
Just because
Price thing?
I just, you know what? I talked about him so much this winter, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Instead, I will use this this time as an opportunity to complain about Eduardo Nunez's helmet, which we've still yet to see come off his head this spring while he's running the bases.
I'm telling you, just because that's a new helmet, it's not broken in yet. It's still a snug fitting.
So I therefore vote for the other utility infielder, Eduardo Escobar.
You know, the Twins have a bunch of guys who are having nice offensive springs, right? So Dozier has this just ridiculous 459 on base percentage, which is just small sample size noise for sure, but it's just fun to look at. You know, Nunez has had a good spring. Suzuki has had himself actually a pretty decent spring as well. Eduardo Escobar, even Danny Santana is having a nice spring. He's not walking to save his life, which I think is one of the big concerns about him because he doesn't necessarily have a lot of power. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to not give it to Brian Dozier at this point. He's got video game numbers right now.
He already got paid for those numbers. We need to see what he does post-contract. So far, he's got one home run. That's not enough.
Jeez. So Paul, if he ends the season hitting 390 with a 480 on base, is he worth the $20 million?
Not if he only has one home run.
If he can do that over a full season, I will hand wash his hair every Tuesday evening.
You would do that now for free.
Oh no. I need to get some kind of compensation. Like maybe get an autograph on one of those giant Dozier cutouts they send out to all the Twin season ticket holders.
Nice. Jay, thoughts?
I'll go Dozier.
Great insight.
Sorry. He's just picking Brian Dozier because Brian Dozier has given him a free helmet nacho.
That's right.
So all right. That's about all he's got. So that's probably all our Twins news, and we are going to continue our series of previewing the rest of the American League Central teams And this week we'll be headed out to talk with our Kansas City Royals correspondents when we come right back.
Actually, before we step away, we had a question from the internet that we've been neglecting for a while that we need to address.
Paul.
All right, let's hear it.
It's not a live show. You're making my editing life so much harder.
No, you just leave it in there and you leave all this in. Just leave it all in.
God, this is why nobody listens.
So the question from the internet from noted question sender from last season, Bill, wants to know, how many games per year do you think our defense has cost us over the last 4 years? Not talking about how much errors, but balls that were hit and not caught like in years past. The Twins have settled for players in the field with less range for more offensive lately. This has hurt the pitcher's ERA due to this. So I ask you, gentlemen, over the last 4 years, on average, how many runs total do you think this defense has cost us? And maybe try to put it into really runs per season or, I don't know, like runs per game. Do you think it's half a run a game?
Yeah, I would say half a run a game. So,
jeez, half a run a game, 81 runs a year
ish. I don't know.
That's eight games. That's eight games a year.
Yeah. Well, you know,
oh,
you got a better number?
Yeah. Like 1.5 games a year. So the defense is getting extra taxed. That's for sure. But having awful pitching to begin with means there's more balls in plays, which means you're bad defense.
Oh, no, that's just not the case.
That's how it works.
That's just not true. That's just not true at all. No, I mean, there might be slightly more.
What?
But it's not.
There's a ton more. The Twins have had the worst pitching staff outside of teams from Colorado for the last three years, and they're not strikeout pitchers, so way more balls are in play, way more runners are on base, so fielders are out of position, and fielders are getting more balls hit to them. So there's more opportunities for them to misplay balls. So I think, on average, maybe it's cost them a game and a half a year, which six games over a four-year span, that's a substantial amount of loss just from having subpar fielders out there.
Whatever. I'm not having this battle with you. Everybody knows you're an idiot.
Jeez. I bet Delman back in his day was costing us a few.
Yeah, Delman definitely cost us a few.
Oh, he was. Yeah, we went from Delman to Willingham. Now we got Torrey. There's been some rough action out there in that left field area. Woof.
If you look at some of the defensive metrics, I think the Twins, I think that maybe half a run is maybe not unreasonable.
Per half game? A run a
game? Yeah.
No.
And I'm just saying ish.
I understand you're saying that a worse pitching staff is going to give up more hits and your defense is going to get more exposed. But that means they're going to give up more. They're going to be responsible for more runs.
And Eric, I mean, these guys play major. They play Major League Baseball. They play. I mean, it's not. I mean, they can play. They're very capable athletes. I mean, they should.
Yeah, and you're saying eight games a year.
Would it make you feel better if I said it was six or five?
Yeah. It would make me feel a lot better if you said, like, something realistic.
I think it's definitely reasonable to say the defense costs this team four games a year.
Yes.
So I think that if we can agree on four and Jay says eight, the truth probably somewhere in between, probably closer to four than eight. But I mean, that's pretty bad.
I don't know.
Well, I hope that answered your question, Bill. Or we tried.
Yeah. Let's just say it's a game and a half. Everyone agree on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Well,
motion is closed.
We're going to step away from the microphones. And when we come back, we're going to talk with the Kansas City Royals insider about what's been going on in Kansas City since the offseason began.
Welcoming now to the show from SB Nation's Royals Review, it is Editor-in-Chief Max Reaper. Max, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. And I appreciate you guys pronouncing my name correctly.
Well, you know, we're customer service first here at Talk the Contact.
Well, as much appreciated.
Okay, so Max, we bring you on to tell us all about what has happened this winter for the reigning American League champion, Kansas City Royals. So if you could just recap the offseason for us.
Well, that just sounds good, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds awful. I'm going to have to just go clean my mouth out.
Well, it was a shorter offseason than usual because we were playing so light, which we're not used to. But yeah, the Royals had some interesting choices to make. They had three notable free agents from their team last year eligible for free agency. And staff ace James Shields, designated hitter Billy Butler, and right fielder Nori Aoki. And to be honest, the Royals didn't make a really strong attempt to keep any of those guys. I think they kind of had a strategy of going in a different direction. I think they knew they couldn't afford James Shields long term. And Billy Butler has always been kind of a poor fit with what they wanted to do. And Nori Aoki just had kind of a poor season in his only season in Kansas City. So what they did was they went out and they actually went after Torii Hunter first, a longtime Minnesota Twin favorite. He's been a guy that the Royals have been coveting for a long time, I think because he seems to kill us every year when we face you guys for a long time, and then when he was with the Tigers as well. But, you know, he decided to come back to Minnesota. The Royals struck out there. They decided to go after Melky Cabrera, who had played in Kansas City before, and they weren't able to come together on a deal with him. He went to Chicago. So they ended up kind of with their plan C, which was the best short-term deal they could find, and that was with Alex Rios, who was with the Texas Rangers last year. And Alex Rios is coming off kind of a bad season. He only hit four home runs in Texas, which is hard to do, and he's going to be 34 this year. So they signed him to a one-year $11 million deal, hoping that, you know, last year he had some nagging injuries with his thumb and with his ankle, and they're hoping that maybe he has something left in the tank. He's had kind of an up-and-down career anyway, so they're hoping they can get him on the upswing. He'll play right field to fill Nori Aoki's spot. To fill Billy Butler at DH, they got Kendrys Morales, who you guys are familiar with, who was pretty much a disaster last season. I think he was the second worst position player by wins above replacement last year. Just a horrible season. But, you know, he didn't sign until June, as you guys know, and he missed out on spring training. And again, he signed a two-year deal with the Royals, so I think they're counting on him having a bounce-back season with a full spring training. And, you know, I think they lose some on-base percentage going from Billy Butler to Kendrys Morales, but obviously he brings a lot more pop in the home run department than Billy Butler. And then finally, to replace James Shields in the rotation, they went out and got Edison Volquez from the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't think they really expect him to replace Shields. It's more of, you know, he's going to be filling in the rotation. And he had one of his best seasons last year in Pittsburgh, but just the year before that, he was released by the San Diego Padres, and he's had a very up-and-down career. He's also moving from the National League to the American League, which is a tough transition. So, you know, they're kind of hitching their wagon to a lot of guys that are big question marks this year. Whether it pays off, you know, remains to be seen. But I think they felt like they had to do that with the short-term deals because this young core that they've had the last couple of years, they're starting to get pretty expensive now. They had 9 arbitration-eligible players this year. I think that increases to 10 next year. And they increased payroll this year, but they're going to have to face, you know, they're a small market team, and you guys know the realities of being a small market team is you got to make tough decisions, and that's the route they decided to go this year. So we'll see. You know, it's not the same group as last year necessarily, but there is some upside with some of these players, but certainly the projection models don't seem to like any of those signings very well. So we'll have to see.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, Max, it sounds like for a team that overachieved last year, it doesn't sound like they're any better.
No, I think you're right about that. I mean, number one, I think you're right. They did overachieve, so they're bound to regress, I think, just if they had kept everyone in place. I think guys like Lorenzo Cain had kind of was his first healthy season, but he also kind of had a really high batting average on balls in play. I think guys like Danny Duffy, who also was healthy for the first time all season, he had a very low batting average on balls in play, suggesting he was a little bit lucky as well. And they had a lot of guys like that. And, you know, as a team, they outperformed their, you know, their runs allowed and runs scored. So, you know, and they also took advantage of a little bit of a down league last year with Detroit underperforming and Oakland having their collapse. So, yeah, I think they did kind of get worse, even if they had brought everyone back. And then to replace the players they lost with these short-term free agents, it's probably a downgrade. Now, I think what they're kind of counting on is that the young guys they have as part of their core are going to get better. Like Danny Duffy is going to get better. Yordano Ventura is going to get better. You know, maybe even like Alcides Escobar and Salvador Perez. But that's a big gamble, you know, because these guys are young, but they're not that young. And they're 27, 28 years old, and not a lot of players suddenly get a lot better at 27, 28 years old. So I think you're right. I think the Royals are definitely not going to be the favorites to win the division this year. You know, they didn't win the division last year. They're not going to be the favorites to be the wild card or win the division this year for sure.
So where is the biggest hole right now as we're moving towards opening day?
Well, I think the starting lineup is still a big weakness with this team. They were dead last in the league in home runs last year and dead last in the league in walks, which usually teams, when they do that, don't make the postseason. So I think that's still a huge deficiency they're going to have to deal with, even with the addition of Kendrys Morales and Alex Rios. If those guys are even decent this year, I think that's still going to be a problem. They're going to need a guy like Eric Hosmer, who's been kind of underwhelming so far in his Royals career. They're going to need him to kind of step up and be the hitter I think a lot of people thought he could be when he was drafted. They're going to need Mike Moustakas to not be just terrible at the plate. I mean, he's a great defender, but he was a disaster at the plate, and it got him sent down to Omaha briefly with an average near the Mendoza line. So they're going to need him to kind of at least be a decent, you know, 250 hitter that can hit 15 to 20 home runs. They're going to need to avoid injuries, I think. If they have any injuries at all to their lineup, they're going to be in some serious trouble because they don't have a lot of depth in the minor leagues, among hitters at least. So I still see the lineup as a big question mark, or, you know, a big deficiency actually, because they were ninth in the league in runs scored last year, and they certainly didn't seem to improve the lineup that much in the offseason.
So Max, as we're now moving into the last week or so of spring training, are there any position battles still undecided in Royals camp?
You know, it's funny. I've been a Royals fan for a long time, and that every year is just like, let's invite as many guys to camp and see what sticks. And you know, that's just kind of what they had to do because they were a bad team. They didn't have a lot of money. And so they were just inviting guys off the street basically to come try out for the team. This year is completely different. This has been the quietest spring training I can ever remember. And they pretty much had almost their 25-man roster set before they got into camp. I think the only... You know, they have the rotation set right now. It's going to be Yordano Ventura on opening day, followed by Danny Duffy, Edison Volquez, Jason Vargas, and then Jeremy Guthrie. And then the lineup's pretty much set with pretty much the seven of the nine guys that started last year, plus Alex Rios and Kendrys Morales. Their only positional battle really is kind of the end of the bench and end of the bullpen. It looks like, you know, the bullpen is solid or even better than it was last year with the addition of Luke Hochaver back in the bullpen after missing all of last year with Tommy John surgery. But it looks like Franklin Morales and the last spot's going to go to either Brian Flynn or Lewis Coleman in the bullpen. And then at the end of the bench, I mean, Ned Yost doesn't use his bench much anyway, I don't think, other than pinch running Gerard Dyson every once in a while or using him as a defensive replacement. So the bench, I'm not sure it's going to matter. They're going to have Christian Colon as a backup infielder, Eric Kratz as a backup catcher, and then who knows as the 25th man, someone they're not going to play very often. So it's been a very quiet spring, and it's been kind of weird as a Royals fan to deal with.
You know, I think a similar thing is happening for the Twins down in Fort Myers, and the Twins came in, and I think we're looking at who is going to be the seventh man in the bullpen, who's going to be the fifth starter, and who's going to be the last guy in the bench, but... When you're a team that lost 90 games a year ago, that's not necessarily a good scenario you want to move into for the spring. So hopefully things work out for the Twins and the Royals this year, but should be interesting to see once games get going. So with the Major League squad pretty much set and ready to go then, are there any exciting prospects that we need to be aware of in the system right now, or the Royals pretty much have everyone that's any good up at the Major League level already?
Well, like I said, I think as far as hitters go, it is pretty thin, and I don't think there's really anyone to get excited about that's going to join the roster this year. Now on the pitching side, I think they're pretty loaded. We saw with Brandon Finnegan, their 2004 draft pick. We saw a little bit of what he can do in the major leagues last year. He came up at the end of September and gave him 7 innings, including a huge strikeout of Jacoby Ellsbury in Yankee Stadium, which is pretty impressive. And then he was on the postseason roster and pitched pretty well until, I think, game 4 of the World Series, where he gave up 5 runs. Other than that, he was pretty solid. So there was actually a big debate. I guess that was one of the roster decisions. Is he going to make the team as a reliever, or are they going to send him to the minors and have him be a starting pitcher? And he's going to be a starting pitcher long term either way, but I think they were just wondering, they're debating what was the best way to use him this year. And ultimately, he didn't pitch that well in camp, and so they sent him down last weekend. And so he'll go to a double A as a starting pitcher. But he won't, you know, it won't be too long before we see him back in the majors, I don't think. And so, you know, he's certainly a guy that can contribute pretty quickly. There's a left-hander by the name of Sean Manaea, who's a former first-round pick, who is a guy that could skyrocket. He was a top 5 talent when he was drafted, but fell because of injury concerns. He's a guy that could rise pretty quickly. And then Kyle Zimmer is another former first-round pick, who everyone seems to think has the best stuff of all, but he just has not been able to stay healthy. He had back injuries last year and then had shoulder surgery over the winter, and he won't be ready till June. Once he does start pitching, the team seems to be pretty aggressive with him, and they seem to think he can contribute this year. I'll kind of believe it when I see it, but I think they have some pitching depth they can deal with that can contribute. And if they're in it in midseason and they are lacking hitters, I think they wouldn't hesitate to trade one of those pitchers maybe for a bat if they are if that would put them in contention.
And then, Max, maybe tell me, because I think a name a lot of the most hardcore Twins fans were familiar with was Bubba Starling. And he seems a guy, the bloom is off of his rose, if it will be.
Yeah, he's been such a lightning rod. And, you know, he's a local kid. He's a Kansas City kid. And, you know, Kansas City's not exactly a hotbed of baseball talent. We don't send a lot of guys to the big leagues. And so I think everyone was excited when the Royals took him in the first round of the draft. And he was he's a great talent. He's a 5-tool guy that could run, throw, hit for power. And he's also a great athlete because he also had a scholarship waiting for him to play football at the University of Nebraska. And he's just gotten to the professional level and has just really struggled making contact. And he's had something like a 30% strikeout rate in the minors, which is just enormous. I've heard it hinted that there may be something neurological with him that he just can't pick up on certain pitches or what. But certainly, you know, he's not going to make it to the major leagues striking out that much. They say his glove will play in the major leagues right now, but he's just got to be able to hit a little. He doesn't even have to hit a lot. He just has to hit a little bit to be useful at the major league level, and he just hasn't even done that. I mean, last year he was pretty much around the Mendoza line in high A ball. They'll probably promote him to double A just to keep him going along, but it's the clock is ticking on him. I think he's already 22 years old, and so I don't know how much how much hope to have in him anymore. His bonus has run out, so he could technically go to the University of Nebraska tomorrow if he wanted to. So we'll have to see if his baseball career ends up panning out. But we're still all rooting for him, that's for sure.
Sure. Anytime you're using a first-round draft pick on a guy, you certainly want to hang on to them and hold out hope as long as you can.
Well, hey, drafting a local kid that was a good football player worked out for you guys. Why couldn't it work out for us, you know?
Yeah, right. So, you know, maybe he'll turn into Joe Mauer someday, right?
That'd be great. I'd settle for just a useful fourth outfielder at this point.
So it sounds like if anyone's coming up from the system this year, it's going to be a pitcher. And as we know with pitchers, injuries happen all of the time, so there certainly could be some reasons for the Royals to dip down into that system. Do you think this is a Royals team right now, just the way they're set up? If we're August and the Royals are contending, is there money available, or is the team in a place where Dayton Moore would be willing to deal prospects in order to get someone back, in order to put them over the hump and get them into the postseason again?
Yeah, I think the pitching depth is there that they would feel comfortable trading a pitcher. One guy who I haven't mentioned at all yet is Chris Medlin, who they signed in the offseason, who I thought that was a fantastic signing. He's a former Braves pitcher coming off his second Tommy John surgery, so there's a lot of injury risk. But when he's healthy, he's one of the, you know, a frontline kind of starting pitcher that can really give you some great innings. So he won't be ready till June, but he could be a nice pick-me-up mid-season. And with his addition, I think they might feel comfortable trading a pitcher or even a minor league pitcher in order to land a bat. But like you allude to, I think money's always going to be a concern when you're a small market team. David Glass, the owner, did commit to raising payroll this year, and he has said that he will spend money if it, that's what it takes to contend. He did take on Josh Willingham last year from you guys, although while Willingham, you know, doesn't make a ton of money, it was still a significant, you know, amount of money. So I think they could make a deal, but money is going to be a concern. The two guys they tried to trade for last year were Alex Rios and Marlon Byrd, and both of them had no trade clauses that they were willing to waive if the Royals would pick up their option for 2015. Now, the Royals weren't willing to do that because of the financial consideration. So that's when that kind of financial consideration does come into play. But I think they would be willing to do that. Dayton Moore hasn't been super aggressive at the trade deadline, but, you know, we've only really had one or two seasons where we've been in contention. So it'll be interesting to see what they do if they are in it in July or August. You know, certainly they have the depth there, I think, to make a move if they need to.
So the World Series run last year maybe allowed Dayton Moore or put him off of the hot seat a little bit. But if the Royals fall on their face again this year, how long can Dayton Moore still survive as a GM in Kansas City?
Well, I think Dayton Moore was on the hot seat last year, as late as July when the team was still kind of floundering. I think the last year's run probably gave him a job here. I wouldn't say as long as he wants it, but probably for at least for the next 3 to 4 or 5 years. He's only signed through 2016, and there were some rumors that when the Braves GM job opened that Dayton Moore might be a candidate for Atlanta. I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, there's some things I like about Dayton Moore and a lot of things I don't like about Dayton Moore as a general manager. But I think the overall consensus among most mainstream fans is that he has done a very good job, that the World Series is something we would have imagined when we hired him, and that we would like to keep him here as long as we could. Now, you know, whether that applies to Ned Yost as well, I don't know. I think both of them have bought quite a bit of time, though, by winning a pennant, and I don't expect either of them to be in the hot seat, even if they fall flat in their face this year.
Okay, well, Max, now is the point in the show where we ask you to put a number on the Royals' upcoming season. So where will they finish in the American League Central, and how many games are they going to win?
Well, that's tough because, I mean, the Central, as you guys know, has gotten a lot tougher this year. You know, I thought Detroit underachieved last year a little bit, and they do lose Max Scherzer, but they do get David Price for the entire season. So they'll probably still be right up there. I think Cleveland is kind of been a sleeper pick. Well, I guess not a sleeper anymore since Sports Illustrated is kind of picking them to win the pennant. But I really like the team Cleveland has. Then Chicago has improved quite a bit as well with their additions of Melky Cabrera and David Robertson and LaRoche and Zamarja. And then even the Twins, you guys had added Irvin Santana, who we love here in Kansas City, to kind of stabilize that rotation. So, this, you know, the Central is going to be a lot tougher. Right now, I have the Royals kind of just in the middle. I think they're probably around 500. I kind of have them as a 78, 79 win team, just because I think so many guys will regress. I think they've been extraordinarily healthy the last couple of years, and that luck might run out this year. And I think the guys they added just are not. They're going to be big downgrades from what they had last year. So I put them third probably, and I think it's going to be a very tight. Three through five, to be honest. I think that the Twins probably really, the Twins and White Sox aren't that much far behind the Royals, and the Indians and Tigers are probably right now the class of the division. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope the Royals, you know, I picked them to be about 500 team last year, and they proved me wrong. And they, you know, they've gone on runs each of the last 2 years in the second half. So, you know, even if it's July and they're still under 500, who knows? They may have another run left in them, but that's right now. I'm not terribly optimistic they'll return to the postseason.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a lot of things need to go right for the Royals in order for them to be a 500 ball club. But once you're there, in the American League Central in a division where 90 wins might very well get you an AL Central crown. Just a couple things need to break your way in the second half. So, Max, I want to thank you for being on the Talk to Contact podcast tonight. Folks, if you like hearing from Max, you can find him on Twitter at Royals Retro. And there's also a brand new Royals Review podcast called Royals Review Radio. So you can find that over at SB Nation's Royals Review. Max, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. And I look forward to the season.
We're back here on the Talk to Contact podcast, and it's that time of the show where we drink a bunch of beers. Jason Korn, from the shores of Lake Minnetonka, what is filling your frosty mug tonight?
I'm sorry, you guys. I did not have time to pick up any beer on the way home from work today, so I am a party killer and not drinking a beer.
How about a vodka do?
Nope, no vodka do's tonight.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Oh, Jason, no wonder you're not as feisty as usual. You've been subdued. So, Cody, save us here. What do you got?
I am having a Finnegan's Irish Amber from Summit's brews, which 100% of the profits from buying this go to feeding the hungry. So not only can you enjoy an Irish Amber, couple weeks away from St. Patrick's Day, but you can enjoy it while some of it's going to a good cause. So,
is this St. Patty's Day leftovers?
It's my parents were here this weekend, and my dad left some in the fridge leftovers.
Nice. Nice. You know, I've had that beer before, the Finnegan's before, and it's not one of my favorites, I'll say that. It's a good cause, but not what I would say is a good beer.
Yeah, I've never purchased it myself. I've only had it when other people have purchased it. So I'm not doing my good, I guess. But I'll buy a beer that I want to drink.
All right, well, I will save things. This week, I am double-fisting beers. I'm drinking from Mankato Brewing, the final Haymaker IPA that was left in the fridge that I talked about a couple weeks ago. And then in my other hand, I have the final Wind Vane from Bad Weather. It's a Minnesota Red Ale. I think I talked about that 3 weeks ago. But I do have two beers in front of me, drinking them both at the same time, little alternating drink action going on. So it's pretty impressive. If you guys could see what's happening over here, you'd be very impressed.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's maybe the finest thing that man has ever done since he learned how to walk upright.
Wow.
I mean, I don't want to overbill it too much, but drinking two beers at one time, I'm making it happen. So that's the beers for this week. And then we wrap up every week, as we do, with Around the League.
Yeah.
Your cue.
League.
Man, this guy's got no beer, no Zvedka do, and he just can't even keep up anymore.
I know. It's a sad state of affairs, I'm telling you.
Well, Jason, this is your favorite segment just about every week, so what's your favorite thing from Around the League this week?
Well, being a former Met fan, I'll steal some of your thunder. We were talking about it earlier before, Eric, but being a former Met fan, Bartolo Colon starting opening day for the New York Mets. Cody, it amuses Cody, it amuses me. I mean, they got to get a laugh out of Bartolo Colon being the opening day starter for the New York Mets.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. I think you were onto something when Cody said that they're trying to probably conserve Harvey's innings a little bit. you know.
But it's opening day. You got Matt Harvey. If you don't want to do Matt Harvey, you've got the young kid, Jacob deGrom, who you can put out there. Get the fans excited. Get people happening. And you're like, no, 5'11", 285 pounds, Bartolo Colon.
I know.
And 285, that's probably generous. He might be 3.5 by this time.
It's fun to watch him bat and how ridiculous he looks in the batter's box.
Yeah, I don't know. Just ridiculous, I guess. So, Bartolo Colon is an opening day starter. This is probably the same type of excitement level in Mets area as it was when Scott Diamond was the opening day pitcher for the Twins.
Woo.
A couple of years back. So, I don't know. It's just not good.
A thing that has just come out even tonight or this afternoon as we're recording this episode that I think is kind of interesting is that last year's number one overall pick, Brady Aiken, who failed to sign his contract because of issues with his elbow or things that came up in the post-draft physical. The team felt like he didn't have that he wasn't structurally sound, so they wanted to give him less money because they didn't feel like he was healthy. And so they got scrutinized for that, for not signing him, and it actually meant that they couldn't sign a couple guys because their draft pool money dropped down so much. But anyway, it turns out there was maybe something brewing there in his elbow, and now he has had to have Tommy John surgery. So I just think, in the grand scheme of things, how this all panned out, I mean, a ton of guys get Tommy John surgery, so maybe there wasn't anything there, but we aren't that far. We're less than, you know, half a year or a little over half a year removed from the draft, and now all of a sudden he was already having
surgery. Yeah, and it was his first start of the year for this IMG Academy where he was going to be playing baseball this year. So it wasn't like he pitched all winter and was throwing hard. I mean, he pretty much, this is finally ramping up for the season, and this happens, and then the weird thing is he breaks the news himself, right? With this on Derek Jeter's Players Tribune. This is the type of thing that just screams to get leaked out beforehand. But I guess when you're just a guy pitching at IMG Academy and people are not necessarily keeping super close watch on that, at least especially not a casual baseball fan, that's the kind of thing that can go undetected. So why not? Break your own news story.
You know, that's interesting. That Players Tribune that Jeter's got going has some really interesting stuff on it sometimes. Do you guys ever have a chance to read that? David Ortiz had a piece in there today responding to, I guess he tested positive from some PEDs a few years ago. And Major League Baseball never told him what exactly it was for. They were very shady about the test positive results and so he wrote about that a little bit, and some other stuff that's on that Jeter Players Tribune is really, really interesting. It's got a great Twitter feed. Jeter's got something good going there. LeBron's written for him, and Kevin Love wrote a nice piece, and so I've read quite a few of those things. And then with baseball starting, with baseball starting up here quick, you know, there'll be a bunch of baseball stuff here in the next few weeks.
I haven't ever read anything on the Players Tribune.
Well, you should. I'm recommending it.
I'm looking at the pictures in the article right now. His girlfriend's pretty hot.
That might be his sister.
Oh.
I skimmed over the article and it mentioned something about his sister being with him.
Oh.
But maybe it's his girlfriend. I don't know.
He's from the South. That's legal down there, right?
Oh, jeez. There's so many things wrong with you.
Another guy dealing with some injury stuff more at the major league level, Anthony Rendon of the Nationals, a guy I think some thought coming into spring training could be an MVP candidate just because of where he's going to fit into that Nationals lineup that's expected to fit near the top of that division. So his it's something that's been bugging him extensively and continues to bother him. And they're not sure if he's going to be ready for opening day now, which is a switch from what they originally thought was just going to be a couple days on the shelf. So something to watch there in the National League. We had a couple of other big signings, or not, I don't know if they're big signings, but we talked about Dozier's big extension earlier in the show.
Or non-extension.
Non-extension. Dozier's new contract. A couple other guys got new contracts. One guy in the AL Central, Adam Eaton of the Chicago White Sox, had a good year for them last season. Speedy outfielder for them. His deal could be worth up to $43.5 million. And then the Marlins signed Christian Yelich, is it?
Yelich.
Yeah. Anyway, he's going to get close to $50 million over the next 7 years. So, you know, he's like an eighth of a Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, and he's a stud, too. I mean, that outfield is going to be impressive down there in Miami. And now with Yelich and Stanton both locked up for the foreseeable future, they could all of a sudden be another one of these Marlins teams that just pops up, wins the World Series, and lights the world on fire.
Yeah, if you have multiple good outfielders and nobody is there to see them, do they exist?
Well, they have to exist because that awesome home run structure has to just light up and go off every once in a while.
How hard would Stanton have to hit a home run off of it to break it, do you think?
I think if Stanton hit a home run that would have went like 480 feet, it would break it, and it would be even better than it is right now. I can imagine, you know, like with three of the lights not working, and when the dolphin is supposed to spin up to the top, it just like flips over like it's dead. It looks like an old carnival amusement park thing that's half working. And then there's like seven guys in the outfield, and they're totally sloppy drunk, just losing their shit watching it go around.
Sounds good to me.
I really love Miami.
Yeah, it sounds like
high
it. Sounds like you're
high opinion of Florida residents also.
Sounds like you're planning your road trip right now.
Yep.
To get down there.
I'll be there for opening day.
Yeah.
I don't know. The one other interesting thing, Asdrubal Cabrera, so he was with the Indians last year, and the Indians decided he wasn't good enough to be an everyday player for them at shortstop. Now he's down with the Rays, and the Rays just this week named him their starting shortstop. And I don't know, Asdrubal Cabrera seemed like he was a twin killer for a while, but for a guy getting up there in years, maybe the Rays see something or saw something and figured something out, but I don't know how many teams he would be the starting shortstop on in Major League Baseball right now. Two, three, maybe?
Yeah, it was pretty rough for him the last time he was over there. So it's interesting that they're keeping him there when they have other guys that could probably fill in maybe even a little better at that position. But the Rays aren't expected to contend this year, I don't think, anyway. So, from what I read, it sounds like maybe it's an opportunity for them. He's only on a one-year deal, so maybe they're hoping he plays decent enough that they could flip him at the deadline and get something back for him, where they can be like, hey, we have this shortstop. He's been playing there all year. Do you want him? You want to add him? And dangle that out there for a few teams. But other than that, yeah, I don't know how much sense it makes. But if you're not going anywhere, you might as well try and play your cards the right way and see if you can get something back in return.
Yeah, and I mean, Cabrera, I mean, he's 28. He's going to be playing his age 29 season. You know, 3 years ago, he was an all-star. 4 years ago, he was a silver slugger and had some MVP votes. You know, and he's been a guy that for his career hit about 270, but the last couple of years, he just like fell off a cliff. 2013, 2014, he was hitting 240. with just barely a 300 on base and no power to speak of. So, I mean, I don't know. He's not awful, but certainly there's no upside there unless he's figured something out or made some type of change to get back to where he was a couple of years ago. So,
why do you hate so many players, Eric? You just know, hate baseball, just don't you?
Hate everyone.
Hey, let me ask you this, Eric. Who is your favorite player right now?
My favorite player right now, Barry Bonds. My favorite playing player right now is Alex Rodriguez.
Okay.
I talked about my love affair with A-Rod before. I just want him to come back and hit like 35 dingers and just like flip everyone off as he runs around the bases.
Could so, happen.
If I had to pick a favorite twin right now, I don't know. I'd probably pick Oswaldo Arcia.
He didn't say twin either. He just said your favorite player. Doesn't have to be a Twins player.
Well, I'm just trying to narrow
Cody,
it down.
Who's your favorite player?
In all of baseball?
Yeah.
Wilson Ramos.
Wilson Ramos, huh?
You would.
I love Wilson Ramos.
You just like thinking about that Matt Kapp straight.
He was one guy that I started following like when he was in the minor leagues, was like when I was just getting into blogging and he was getting close to the major leagues. So he was just a guy I latched onto back then. And he's been just someone I've followed throughout his career. I probably have the most extensive Wilson Ramos trading card collection known to man. Oh, yeah.
What would you put the value of your Wilson Ramos trading card collection at?
It's pretty. I have like one of ones cards that are really hard to get. I have a super refractor. I have an autograph one that's made out of wood that was from Topps Triple Threads. Holy that's a smokes. One of one. Yeah, I have some. It's pretty intense. So, yeah, I like me some Wilson Ramos.
Well, I'm glad that his kidnappers let him go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that too.
I mean, the dude was kidnapped.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Crazy.
Sauce.
That's just crazy. My favorite player, I think, is Joe. It is. Joe's my favorite player.
Joe Mauer.
Yep.
Very interesting.
All
you
right.
Hate Joe Mauer.
Of course.
Half of the time.
Hate you too half the time.
Am I your favorite Talk to Contact co-host?
I love you all the same.
Thanks, Dad.
All right, this show is derailing. We need to get out of here.
All right, that's going to do it for us this week on Talk to Contact. If you want to send in questions to the show, you can tweet us at Talk to Contact or drop us an email, talktocontact@gmail.com. Rate and review this show on iTunes. Tell your friends. Opening day is coming, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hoyas. Yeah.